Chapter 127. Missing, the term of Mr. Dorrit's visit was within 2 days of being out, and he was about to dress for another inspection by the chief butler, whose victims were always dressed expressly for him, when one of the servants of the hotel presented himself bearing a card. Mr. Dorrit, taking it, read, Mrs. Finching. Apostrophe, the servant waited in speechless deference. Man, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, turning upon him with grievous indignation, explain your motive in bringing me this ridiculous name. I am wholly unacquainted with it. Finching, sir? Apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, perhaps avenging himself on the chief butler by substitute. Ha! What do you mean by finching? Apostrophe, the man, seemed to mean flinching as much as anything else, for he backed away from Mr. Dorrit's severe regard, as he replied, A lady, sir. Apostrophe, I know no such lady, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. Take this card away. I know no flinching of either sex. Apostrophe, ask your pardon, sir. The lady said she was aware she might be unknown by name. But she begged me to say, sir, that she had formerly the honor of being acquainted with Miss Dorrit. The lady said, sir, the youngest Miss Dorrit. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit knitted his brows and rejoined, after a moment or two, inform Mrs. Finching, sir, apostrophe, emphasizing the name, as if the innocent man were solely responsible for it, that she can come up. Apostrophe, he had reflected, in his momentary pause, that unless she were admitted she might leave some message, or might say something below, having a disgraceful reference to that former state of existence. Hence the concession, and hence the appearance of Flora, piloted in by the man. I have not the pleasure, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, standing with the card in his hand, and with an air which imported, that it would scarcely have been a first-class pleasure, if he had had it, of knowing either this name, or yourself, madam. Plus a chair, sir. Apostrophe, the responsible man, with a start, obeyed, and went out on tiptoe. Flora, putting aside her veil with a bashful tremor upon her, proceeded to introduce herself. At the same time a singular combination of perfumes was diffused through the room, as if some brandy had been put by mistake in a lavender water bottle, or as if some lavender water had been put by mistake in a brandy bottle. I beg Mr. Dorrit to offer 1,000 apologies, and indeed they would be far too few for such an intrusion which I know must appear extremely bold in a lady and alone too, but I thought it best upon the whole, however difficult, and even apparently improper, though Mr. F.S. Ant would have willingly accompanied me, and as a character of great force and spirit would probably have struck one possessed of such a knowledge of life as no doubt with so many changes must have been acquired, for Mr. F. himself said frequently that, although well educated in the neighborhood of Blackheath at as high as 80 guineas, which is a good deal for parents, and the plate kept back too on going away, but that is more a meanness than its value, that he had learned more in his first years as a commercial traveler with a large commission on the sale of an article, that nobody would hear of, much less by which proceeded the wine trade a long time, than in the whole 6 years in that academy conducted by a college bachelor, though why a bachelor more clever than a married man I do not see, and never did. But pray excuse me, that is not the point. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit stood rooted to the carpet, a statue of mystification. I must openly admit that I have no pretensions, apostrophe, said Flora, but having known the dear little thing which under altered circumstances appears a liberty, but is not so intended, and goodness knows there was no favor in half a crown a day to such a needle as herself, but quite the other way, and as to anything lowering in it, far from it, the laborer is worthy of his hire, and I am sure I only wish he got it oftener, and more animal food and less rheumatism in the back and legs, poor soul. Apostrophe, madam, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, recovering his breath by a great effort, as the relict of the late Mr. Finching stopped to take hers. Madam, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, very red in the face, If I understand you to refer to A to anything in the antecedents of a daughter of mine, involving A daily compensation, madam, I beg to observe that the A fact, assuming it A to be fact, never was within my knowledge. I should not have permitted it. Never. Never. Apostrophe, unnecessary to pursue the subject, apostrophe returned Flora, and would not have mentioned it on any account except as supposing it a favorable, and only letter of introduction, but as to being fact no doubt whatever, and you may set your mind at rest for the very dress I have on now can prove it and sweetly made, though there is no denying, that it would tell better on a better figure for my own is much too fat, though how to bring it down I know not. Pray excuse me, I am roving off again. Apostrophe Mr. Dorrit back to his chair in a stony way, and seated himself, as Flora gave him a softening look and played with her parasol. The dear little thing, apostrophe said Flora, having gone off perfectly limp and white and cold in my own house, or at least Papa's for, though not a freehold still a long lease at a peppercorn on the morning, when Arthur foolish habit of our youthful days and Mr. Clennam far more adapted to existing circumstances particularly addressing a stranger, and that stranger a gentleman in an elevated station communicated the glad tidings imparted by a person of name of Panks emboldens me. Apostrophe, at the mention of these two names, Mr. Dorrit frowned, stared, frowned again, hesitated with his fingers at his lips, as he had hesitated long ago, and said, do me the favor to state your pleasure, madam. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit, apostrophe said Flora, you are very kind in giving me permission, and highly natural it seems to me, that you should be kind for, though more stately I perceive a likeness filled out of course, but a likeness still, the object of my intruding, is my own without the slightest consultation with any human being and most decidedly, not with Arthur pray excuse me Doyce and Clennam I don't know what I am saying Mr. Clennam solace for. To put that individual linked by a golden chain to a purple time, when all was ethereal out of any anxiety, would be worth to me the ransom of a monarch. Not that I have the least idea how much that would come to, but using it as the total of all I have in the world and more. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit, without greatly regarding the earnestness of these latter words, repeated, state your pleasure, madam. Apostrophe, it's not likely I well know, apostrophe said Flora, but it's possible, and being possible when I had the gratification of reading in the papers, that you had arrived from Italy, and were going back I made up my mind, to try it for you might come across him, or hear something of him, and if so what a blessing and relief to all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, allow me to ask, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, with his ideas in wild confusion, to whom, to whom, apostrophe he repeated it with a raised voice in mere desperation, you at present allude? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to the foreigner from Italy who disappeared in the city as no doubt you have read in the papers equally with myself, apostrophe said Flora, not referring to private sources by the name of Panks from which one gathers, what dreadfully ill-natured things some people are wicked enough, to whisper most likely judging others by themselves, and what the uneasiness and indignation of Arthur quite unable to overcome at Doyce and Clennam cannot fail to be. Apostrophe, it happened, fortunately for the elucidation of any intelligible result, that Mr. Dorrit had heard, or read nothing about the matter. This caused Mrs. Finching, with many apologies for being in great practical difficulties, as to finding the way to her pocket among the stripes of her dress at length, to produce a police handbill, setting forth that a foreign gentleman of the name of Blandois, last from Venice, had unaccountably disappeared on such a night in such a part of the city of London, that he was known to have entered such a house, at such an hour, that he was stated by the inmates of that house to have left it, about so many minutes before midnight, and that he had never been beheld since. This, with exact particulars of time and locality, and with a good detailed description of the foreign gentleman who had so mysteriously vanished, Mr. Dorrit read at large. Blandois. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Dort. Venice. And this description. I know this gentleman. He has been in my house. He is intimately acquainted with a gentleman of good family but in indifferent circumstances, of whom I am a humble patron. Apostrophe, then my humble and pressing entreaty is the more, apostrophe said Flora, that in traveling back you will have the kindness to look for this foreign gentleman along all the roads, and up and down all the turnings, and to make inquiries for him at all the hotels, and orange trees and vineyards and volcanoes and places, for he must be somewhere, and why doesn't he come forward, and say he's there, and clear all parties up? Apostrophe apostrophe, pray, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dort, referring to the handbill again. Who is Clennam and Company? Question mark. Ah, I see the name mentioned here, in connection with the occupation of the house which Monsieur Blandois was seen to enter. Who is Clennam and Company? Question mark. Is it the individual, of whom I had formerly some slight transitory knowledge, and to whom I believe you have referred? Is it that person? Apostrophe, it's a very different person indeed, apostrophe replied Flora, with no limbs and wheels instead, and the grimmest of women though his mother. Apostrophe, Clennam and Company a mother, apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Dort. And an old man besides, apostrophe said Flora. Mr. Dort looked as if he must immediately be driven out of his mind by this account. Neither was it rendered more favorable to sanity by Flora's dashing into a rapid analysis of Mr. Flintwinch's cravat, and describing him, without the lightest boundary line of separation between his identity and Mrs. Clennam's, as a rusty screw and gaiters. Which compound of man and woman, no limbs, wheels, rusty screw, grimness, and gaiters, so completely stupefied Mr. Dort, that he was a spectacle to be pitied. But I would not detain you one moment longer, apostrophe said Flora, upon whom his condition wrought its effect, though she was quite unconscious of having produced it, if you would have the goodness to give your promise as a gentleman, that both in going back to Italy and in Italy too you would look for this Mr. Blandois high and low, and if you found or heard of him make him come forward for the clearing of all parties. Apostrophe by that time Mr. Dort had so far recovered from his bewilderment, as to be able to say, in a tolerably connected manner, that he should consider that his duty. Flora was delighted with her success, and rose to take her leave. With a million thanks, apostrophe said she, and my address upon my card in case of anything to be communicated personally, I will not send my love to the dear little thing for it might not be acceptable, and indeed there is no dear little thing left in the transformation so I do it, but both myself and Mr. F.S. and ever wish her well, and lay no claim to any favor on our side you may be sure of that, but quite the other way for, what she undertook to do she did, and that is more than a great many of us do, not to say anything of her doing it as well as it could be done, and I myself am one of them for I have said ever since I began to recover the blow of Mr. F.'s death, that I would learn the organ, of which I am extremely fond, but of which I am ashamed to say I do not yet know a note. Good evening. Apostrophe apostrophe, when Mr. Dort, who attended her to the room door, had had a little time to collect his senses, he found that the interview had summoned back discarded reminiscences which jarred with the Myrtle dinner table. He wrote and sent off a brief note excusing himself for that day, and ordered dinner presently in his own rooms at the hotel. He had another reason for this. His time in London was very nearly out, and was anticipated by engagements. His plans were made for returning, and he thought it best of his importance to pursue some direct inquiry into the Blandois disappearance, and be in a condition to carry back to Mr. Henry Gowan the result of his own personal investigation. He therefore resolved that he would take advantage of that evening's freedom to go down to Clennam & Company's, easily to be found by the direction set forth in the handbill, and see the place, and ask a question or two there himself. having dined as plainly as the establishment, and the courier would let him, and having taken a short sleep by the fire for his better recovery from Mrs. Finching, he set out in a hackney cabriolet alone. The deep bell of Street Paul's was striking 9 as he passed under the shadow of Temple Bar, headless and forlorn in these degenerate days. As he approached his destination through the by-streets and waterside ways, that part of London seemed to him an uglier spot at such an hour than he had ever supposed it to be. Many long years had passed since he had seen it. He had never known much of it, and it wore a mysterious and dismal aspect in his eyes. So powerfully was his imagination impressed by it, that when his driver stopped, after having asked the way more than once, and said to the best of his belief this was the gateway they wanted, Mr. Dorrit stood hesitating, with the coach door in his hand, half afraid of the dark look of the place. Truly, it looked as gloomy that night as even it had ever looked. 2 of the handbills were posted on the entrance wall, one on either side, and as the lamp flickered in the night air, shadows passed over them, not unlike the shadows of fingers following the lines. A watch was evidently kept upon the place. As Mr. Dorrit paused, a man passed in from over the way, and another man passed out from some dark corner within, and both looked at him in passing, and both remained standing about. As there was only one house in the enclosure, there was no room for uncertainty, so he went up the steps of that house and knocked. There was a dim light in 2 windows on the first floor. The door gave back a dreary, vacant sound, as though the house were empty, but it was not, for a light was visible, and a step was audible, almost directly. They both came to the door, and a chain grated, and a woman with her apron thrown over her face and head stood in the aperture. "Who is it?" said the woman. Mr. Dorrit, much amazed by this appearance, replied that he was from Italy, and that he wished to ask a question relative to the missing person, whom he knew. "Hi!" cried the woman, raising a cracked voice. "Jeremiah!" Upon this, a dry old man appeared, whom Mr. Dorrit thought he identified by his gaiters, as the Rusty Screw. The woman was under apprehensions of the dry old man, for she whisked her apron away as he approached, and disclosed a pale affrighted face. "Open the door, you fool," said the old man, "and let the gentleman in." Mr. Dorrit, not without a glance over his shoulder towards his driver and the cabriolet, walked into the dim hall. "Now, sir," said Mr. Flintwinch, "you can ask anything here you think proper. There are no secrets here, sir." Before a reply could be made, a strong, stern voice, though a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.